ओम विष्णु शिवाय कृष्ण कृष्णाय भूतले श्रीमती भक्ति वेदांत स्वामी नमस्ते सरस्वती देवी गौरवाणी कृष्णाय नमस्ते सरस्वती सरस्वती देवी कृष्णाय ओम गणतमिहंदस्य जनार्दनस्वताय चक्षुसुमिरसां जेन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः श्री चैतन्य मनोभीष्टं स्थितं जैन भूतले स्वयं रूपकदम्यं ददति सापदन्तिकम् मंत्र कौपीज्य कृपा सिंधु Chapter 4. Who knows what the title of the 10th canto of chapter 4 is? Who remembers what happened at the end in chapter 3? Anyone remember? That's chapter 4. There's atrocities or persecutions begin, because we heard in the previous chapter how Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, was born. And that right at the end of the chapter it described how Vasudeva was inspired to take Krishna across the river. What river? Yamuna River. On a stormy night, and Anantashesha holding his hoods to protect this baby Krishna and his carrier Vasudeva. And brought him across, and just then Yasoda Mayi had given birth to a little girl, but actually also a little boy, as we'll hear today, together, twins. And Vasudeva exchanged that child, his boy child, who was Vishnu, the Vasudeva form, exchanged it with the girl child, who was Yogamaya, born of Mother Yasoda, and brought that child back to the prison of Kamsa. And Yogamaya then woke everyone up, and the child began to cry. We'll hear that right now. Sukadeva Goswami is speaking to Maharaj Prickett, because Maharaj Prickett is soon to leave this world, not like us, because we're going to be here forever. So therefore, Maharaj Prickett, who had only a few days to live, maybe just 2 days left or 3 days left, four most, because so much of the Bhagavatam had already been spoken. Just so few days to live. And Sukadeva wished, and Prickett Maharaj wished, that Sukadeva's consciousness, or rather Prickett Maharaj's consciousness, would be filled with Krishna Katha. Because whatever one is thinking at the time of death, whatever sadatad bhava bharata, whatever bhava or mood we are in, and what is filling our consciousness, we will attain that place. Sada, always. This is the law. And because the enforcer of the law is all powerful, because there are so many laws, but the people who enforce the laws of this world don't have the power to perfectly and fully enforce them, but Krishna does. So therefore it's always going to happen. Whatever we think of at the time when we're leaving this world, and including the mood, we go to that place. So Prickett Maharaj, his consciousness was ecstatic, and Sukadeva's consciousness was ecstatic, and there was a transference of ecstasy, because they had, both these personalities had great love for Krishna. And by hearing from them, we can also develop our love for Krishna. And this is the purpose of our life, our existence, to develop love for Krishna. Prema, pramarto, mohan, Mahaprabhu has said. Srimad Bhagavatam, pramanam, amalam, prema, pramarto, mohan. We're getting the absolute truth in a very perfect form from Srimad Bhagavatam. So my dear King Prickett, the doors inside and outside the house, the prison house, closed as before, and thereafter the inhabitants of the house, especially the watchmen, heard the crying of the newborn child and thus awakened from their beds. Prabhupada's purport, we'll read the second half. Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur has remarked that the watchmen were just like dogs. Why? Prabhupada will explain it, but why the watchmen compared to dogs? That's not very nice thing to say about them, is it? It's like dogs.
They're always very alert.
They're alert. Except when they're fully asleep, which is about 50-50. Yeah, and they take, Prabhupada explains it really, he knows the dogs of, he says, really, you see this in Vrindavan, they're so territorial, the dogs, this is their area, and if anyone dares to come in their area, they're self-appointed watchmen of the area, no one appoints them, but they, if anyone comes, they start barking and bite them and everything, especially if it's another dog. At night, the dogs in the street act like watchmen. If one dog barks, many other dogs immediately follow it by barking. Although the street dogs are not appointed by anyone to act as watchmen, they think they are responsible for protecting the neighborhood. And as soon as someone unknown enters, they all begin to bark. Both Yogamaya and Mahamaya act in all material activities, Prakriti Kriyamana Nigunai Kamani Savasha. But although the energy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead acts under the Supreme Lord's direction, Maya Dakshena Prakriti Siyate Satcha Characharan, dog-like watchmen, such as politicians and diplomats, think they are protecting their neighborhoods from the dangers of the outside world. These are the actions of Maya. So ultimately, everything is under the control of Krishna's internal energy, his personal potency. But yet, the individuals who are acting in this world, they are only indirectly controlled by Krishna. They are still following Krishna's plan, but their consciousness is not at all following Krishna's plan. Their consciousness is, I am following my plan. I am the most important person. So for those persons, which is everyone in the material world, the Mahamaya, Krishna's Mahamaya is working. Krishna's external energy. Bahir Anga Shakti. External energy, the energy of illusion and darkness. But yet, what that person is doing, what every person is doing, despite his darkness, is fitting in fully with the super control imposed by the internal energy. This is quite astounding. The Supreme Director is directing everyone. He's pulling the strings like Karputli, Putulnach. So the marionettes, the puppets, pulling the strings. So we're like that, but the strings are being pulled by the external energy, and Krishna is ultimately telling the external energy how to work it, and we're thinking, look how wonderfully my hand is moving. And as soon as the string is cut by the arrangement of Krishna, then we lose our ability, and then we lament. We thought we were the one doing it. So these are the actions of Maya. The dogs, and Prabhupada is comparing the politicians and diplomats to the dogs. They're the protectors that actually, they're just like the watchmen who are walking. But Prabhupada says, and he completes his purport, one who surrenders to Krishna is relieved of the protection afforded by the dogs and dog-like guardians of the material world. What is Prabhupada talking about in that sense? But one who surrenders to Krishna is relieved of the protection afforded by the dogs and the dog-like guardians of this material world. What is the meaning of that sentence?
They're claiming they're giving protection, but they can't give protection from the laws of nature.
But this is... But one who surrenders to Krishna is relieved of the protection afforded by the dogs and dog-like guardians of this material world.
This is explained like when someone surrenders to Krishna, so there is, because the Maya, the illusion energy also is controlled by the Lord. So the like he's also servant, obedient servant, he's taking care, doing her job. So when the person is completely surrendered, so she is not responsible for the Krishna.
But who is the free. Who is doing the protection?
Krishna.
For a surrendered soul.
Krishna.
And to place oneself under the protection of Krishna is the main point of Sharanagati, or surrender, giving oneself to Krishna. Gotripte varanam tata. This is the angi, the main part of surrender, putting oneself under the protection of the Lord. And then when one is under the protection of the Lord, under Krishna's protection, one places himself under that protection, then he's no longer under the protection of the lesser persons, as Prabhupada is comparing to dogs, or Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. He's directly under Krishna's protection. Krishna, how is that possible? I'm so little and insignificant. How will Krishna take care of me? What's your answer to that?
Because the supreme controller, he's controlling everything, from the little to big, everything.
And the Sharanagati makes a difference.
Just like a father taking care of the child.
So that's all that's lacking, is us putting ourselves under his shelter. But that is it. That's bhakti. That's where bhakti begins, when the living entity does that. Easy to talk about sometimes, but not easy to do. But this is devotional service. And Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, Mame kam sharanam vraja, ham tam sarva papebhyo moksha shami masucha masucha, means don't think that you're not advanced enough to do it. Doesn't make any difference. Just don't fear, don't hesitate, don't worry. Give yourself to Krishna. Advance, not advance, just do it. Krishna will take you. All the watchmen very quickly approach King Kamsa because they wanted a bone to be the first one to tell him, because Kamsa was waiting. Why was he waiting? He had been waiting so long. He had killed so many other children. How many of the sons of Devaki had he killed already? Six. One was, he thought, was a miscarriage. And here is the eighth one who had been predicted. Kamsa, the eighth, you don't know that the eighth daughter, the eighth son of Devaki, you're driving the chariot, is going to kill you. So Kamsa had been waiting and waiting. And now the watchmen were running to Kamsa. The child has been born. He submitted, he quickly approached. The watchman quickly approached King Kamsa, the ruler of the Bhoja dynasty, and submitted the news of the birth of Devaki's child. Kamsa, who had awaited this news very anxiously, immediately took action. Text 3. Kamsa immediately got up from bed, thinking, here is Kala, the supreme time factor, which has taken birth to kill me. Thus, overwhelmed, Kamsa, his hair scattered on his head, at once approached a place where the child had been born. So he didn't even wait. He was in so much anxiety. And so interesting what he said. Here is Kala. Kala means Krishna. Kalusman Lokachaya Krit, Prabhupada would say in the purport. Time, Kala Rupa, destroys everything in this world. So Kamsa's thinking, and each one of us have our time is coming. For the body, the time is coming for birth, and the time comes for growth, and then maintenance, dwindle, death. Everyone has their time. So Kamsa is saying, now my time of death in the form of this child has just taken birth. And therefore, what did he want to do? Kill it immediately. But he's just said that this is the child's going to kill me. How could you kill one's death? The thing that's going to kill you, how can you kill it? Here's Prabhupada's purport. So he rushed there. What is the significance? He didn't even, his hair was scattered on his head. What does that mean? What is the implication of that, the indication?
Fear.
How is that fearful? When you, of course, none of us, at least on this side, don't have the problem. When you wake up in the morning, you know, no one will go outside without, because you look like a fool. Your hair is, although it's the fashion nowadays, but but he didn't even take the time. He was so frightened. He didn't even make himself presentable. He was so filled with fear. Purport. The word Kala is significant. Although the child was born to kill Kamsa, Kamsa thought that this was the proper time to kill the child, that he himself would be saved. Kala is actually another name of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, when he appears only for the purpose of killing. When Arjuna inquired from Krishna in his universal form, "Who are you?" the Lord presented himself as Kala, death personified, to kill. Krishna showed his Kala Rupa, was destroying everything. And Arjuna said, "My dear Lord, fierce form, who are you? What is your identity? That you're killing, devouring everything in existence, everyone." And Krishna said, "Kalosmin, I am time, and I've come to destroy everything." So for the non-devotees, that is how they must, everyone must accept God in this form, in the form of death. That's whether one may be thinking oneself so powerful, but everyone has to submit to Krishna when through Kala death comes. All plans finished, all pride finished. By nature's law, when there is an unwanted increase in population, Kala appears, and by some arrangement of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, people are killed wholesale in different ways, by wars, pestilence, famine, and so on, disasters, continuously going on in this world. At that time, even atheistic political leaders go to a church, mosque, or temple for protection by God or gods, and submissively say, "God willing." What's the Islamic term for that? Salah? No. Salah. What do they say, "God willing"?
Salam alaikum.
No, that's... Hello, friend. Peace. No. God willing. Jack Rupert knows. He told me. Yeah, I forgot.
Inshallah.
Huh?
Inshallah.
Yes, inshallah. What does that mean? God willing.
Inshallah means that God meant
everything.
Inshallah.
That is Muslim. God's will, yes. Inshallah. Bhagavan ki kripa. What to do? So there, before that, they pay no attention to God, not caring to know God or His will. But when Kala appears, they say, "God willing." Death is but another feature of the Supreme Kala, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. At the time of death, the atheist must submit to the Supreme Kala. And then the Supreme Personality of Godhead takes away all his possessions, mrityu sabharas chaham, and forces him to accept another body, tata dehantara praptir. Thus, the atheists do not know, and if they do know, they neglect it so that they may go on with their normal life. Very heavy, actually, this prophet's just that speaks so bluntly the truth. The Krishna consciousness movement is trying to teach them. Remember, this is what the purpose, a purpose of the Krishna consciousness movement was, this is what we're supposed to be doing. Trying to teach them that although for a few years one may act as a great protector, a great watchman, with the appearance of kala, death, one must take another body by the laws of nature. Not knowing this, they unnecessarily waste their time and their occupation as watchdog and do not try to get the mercy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So it's easy to say they are like this and they are like that and they are like that, and Prabhupada has the right to say they. But are we also the theys who waste our time and do not try to get the mercy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead? Are we in the category of they? As it is clearly said, apropyamam navartante mrityu samsaravatmani. Without Krishna consciousness, one is condemned to continue wandering in birth and death, not knowing what will happen in one's next birth. Devaki helplessly, piteously appealed to Kamsa, because Kamsa came in, rushed in, his hair all messed up. He had just woken up, the watchman had woken him. She appealed to him, "My dear brother, all good fortune to you. Don't kill this girl. She'll be your daughter-in-law. Indeed, it is unworthy of you to kill a woman." She says, Kalyana, she says, "Oh, you are so auspicious." She's being diplomatic, and what she's saying indirectly, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains, is, "You are auspicious, but killing a newborn baby and a girl, that is so inauspicious. Don't do this, because you are so auspicious. Don't do something inauspicious." Prabhupada's purport. Kamsa had previously excused Devaki because he thought that a woman should not be killed, especially when pregnant. But now, by the influence of Maya, he was prepared to kill a woman, not only a woman, but a small, helpless, newborn baby. Why was he? Why was he ready to do that? Completely selfish and fear, terrified. Therefore, Devaki told him, "Don't be so atrocious to kill a female child. Let there be all good fortune to you." Demons can do anything for their personal benefit, not considering what is pious or vicious. But Devaki, on the contrary, although safe because she had already given birth to her own son, Krishna, was anxious to save the daughter of someone else. That was natural for her. Because remember, this wasn't her child, but she was acting as if it was her child. She wanted, her child was where? In Gokul. Right now, the boy with the beautiful Vishnu child, and now this girl was there, and now she wanted to save this child. "My dear brother," she's, "brother, I'm your sister, remember, how could you do this? By the influence of destiny, you have already killed many babies. Each of them is bright and beautiful as fire. So many of my six of my effulgent children you have already killed. My dear brother, by the influence of destiny, it's not your fault, because if she said," Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur explains, "if she said, 'You've killed six of my children, rascal,' then he would have become angry. So she said, just by the influence of Daiva, by the influence of destiny, you've done this, you know. Anyone can do something, you know, by destiny, not a problem, but just spare this one. Kindly spare this daughter. Give her to me as your gift." Purport. Movie, first half. Here we see that Devaki first focused Kansa's attention on his atrocious activities, his killing of her many sons, but indirectly, so that she wouldn't get angry. Then she wanted to compromise with him by saying that whatever he had done was not his fault, but was ordained by destiny. Then she appealed to him to give her the daughter as a gift. Devaki was the daughter of a Kshatriya and knew how to play the political game. In politics, there are different methods of achieving success. First, dam, repression, then compromise, sama, and then asking for a gift, dhana. Devaki first adopted the policy of repression by directly attacking Kamsa for having cruelly, atrociously killed her babies, and then she compromised by saying this was not his fault, and then she begged for a gift. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains it a little differently, but also wonderfully. Fearing that Kamsa would become angry after she criticized him for his cruelty in killing her previous sons, Devaki said, "It is my fate, Daiva Nistena. What fault is there in you?" She then expressed her pitiful condition, praying that Kamsa should not make her arms devoid of the child. Don't kill her. Text 6. "My lord, my brother, I am very poor, being bereft of all my children, but still I am your youngest sister, and therefore it would be worthy of you to give me this last child as a gift." Sukadeva Goswami continued, piteously embracing her daughter and crying. Devaki begged Kamsa for the child, but he was so cruel that he chastised her and forcibly snatched the child from her hand. So in this text, the word is dinavat, that she was, Prabhupada explains it, also Chakravarti Thakur explains it. Although Devaki was crying like a poor, very poor woman, actually she was not poor, and therefore the word used here is dinavat. Dina means low, or poor, or possessing nothing. And vat means like someone who's poor. She's not actually poor because her child is Krishna, and her child's been brought to Gokul already. But she's acting like a person who is going to be divested of everything. Even the demigods had come to offer prayers to Devaki, but she played the part of a poor, piteously afflicted woman because she wanted to save the daughter of Yashoda. And also she had to act as if this was her child, because if she said, "Yeah, take the child, no problem," and Kamsa would have obviously thought, "This is not how a mother acts." Like that story in the Bible of King Solomon. There were two women who came before the king and said, "This is..." Both claiming the baby. You know this little story? They both were claiming the baby. One baby is theirs. So Solomon thought, "How will I tell who is the real mother?" So she said, "Okay, since you both say it's yours, we'll cut it in half." And one said, "Yes, okay." And the other one said, no, how could I allow you to do that? Better that the child lives and you give it to her." So he recognized, this is the mother. He gave the child to her. Having uprooted all relationships with his sister because of intense selfishness, Kamsa, who was sitting on his knees, so he was down on the ground, because Devaki was on the ground having given the birth, he was on his knees, and he was completely, intensely selfish, and he didn't care about any relationship with his sister. So he grasped the newborn child by the legs and tried to dash her against the surface of a stone very hard. Can you imagine? I know a devotee came, a baby, and take it. You have to be an animal to do something like that. And that's because of his fear and because of his hardness of heart. What to speak of any baby, your sister's baby, younger sisters, inconceivable for a devotee. tried to dash her against the surface of a stone. Now, the next verse is actually very important. There's not a big, there's not a long commentary, but there's something very important in it. Satar hastat samutpatya. So that sa, that female child, dashtat, tad hastat, from from his hand, samutpatya, slipped upward, because this was not an ordinary child. This was Yogamaya. So from Kamsa's hand, he had picked up the child by the legs, was about to kill her, but she slipped out of his hands and went upward. Sadyo Devi Ambaram Gata. Sadya, immediately Devi, she took the form of the demigoddess, Yogamaya, Maya Devi, Devi Ambaram Gata, and she went into the sky. Adrishyata Anuja Vishnu. Adrishyata means she was seen, and then she was in the sky, seen as Anuja Vishnu. Anuja means the younger sister of Vishnu. Very important. So if she's the younger sister of Krishna, of Vishnu, if Krishna is just born in Mathura in the prison, and then Vasudev takes her across the river and then takes this child born of Nandan Yasoda, the girl child who's the Devi, then how is she the younger sister of Krishna? So Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explained in Prabhupada, we say the same thing in his purport. So in the last line is Sayudasta Mahabhuja. So she appeared in the sky, the younger sister of Vishnu, with weapons. Sayudha, with weapons. Asta, eight arms, each holding a weapon. Mahabhuja, eight mighty arms. Translation. The child Yogamaya Devi, the youngest sister of Lord Vishnu, slipped upward from Kamsa's hands and appeared in the sky as Devi, the goddess Durga, with eight arms, completely equipped with weapons. That's short purport, but important. Adrishyata Anuja Vishnu. Kamsa tried to dash the child downward against a piece of stone, very forcefully, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains. But since she was Yogamaya, the younger sister of Lord Vishnu, she slipped upward and assumed the form of the goddess Durga. The word Anuja, meaning the younger sister, is significant, Prabhupada says. When Vishnu or Krishna takes birth from Devaki, he must have simultaneously taken birth from Yasoda also. Otherwise, how could Yogamaya have been the Anuja, the Lord's younger sister? And that comes from Vishwanath, who says, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, as Yogamaya was falling to the ground, she forcefully leaped into the sky. The Bhavishya Uttara Purana says that Yogamaya Durga put her foot on Kamsa's head as she went up into the sky. She is described here as the youngest sister, Anuja. Anu means, Ja means birth, and Anu means following. So following the birth of, so she's younger. She's described here, Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur says, as the youngest sister of Krishna, Anuja, indicating that Krishna as well as Yogamaya were born from Yasoda. She held weapons in her eight arms to frighten Kamsa. Text 10 through 11. The goddess Durga was decorated with flower garlands, smeared with sandalwood pulp, and dressed with excellent garments and ornaments made of valuable jewels. Holding in her hand a bow, trident, arrow, a shield, a sword, a conch shell, a disc, and a club, and being praised by celestial beings like Apsaras, Kanaras, Udagas, Siddhas, Charanas, and Gandharvas, who worshipped her with all kinds of presentations, she spoke as follows. So Durga then spoke Anuja Vishnu. Oh Kamsa, you fool, what will be the use of killing me? I'm not the one who's supposed to kill you. If I'm the younger child, you're going to kill me. But you know, it was a boy child, it's not me, and still you're trying to kill me? You fool. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, who has been your enemy from the very beginning and who will certainly kill you, has already taken his birth somewhere else. Therefore, do not unnecessarily kill other children. After speaking to Kamsa in this way, the goddess Durga, Yogamaya, appeared in different places, such as Benares, and became celebrated by different names, such as Annapurna, Durga, Kali, and Bhadra. Text 14. So she's saying that the child who will kill you is already born somewhere else, of someone else. Devaki is very Kamsa now won't blame her, because they, from Devaki's point of view, her child was taken across the river, and Durga, from Devaki's point of view, Durga Devi was covering for her and made up a, yes, he is born somewhere else. So don't try and kill these children. So after hearing the words of the goddess Durga, Kamsa was struck with wonder. Why? Why was Kamsa amazed?
He was told that Devaki would kill him.
Well, that's one reason. I mean, just think how you'd feel. You're trying to kill this child, and then the child gets eight arms and goes up into the sky and calls you a fool. He was awestruck. This was Durga. Durga's the you know, she's the controller of the material world. Yeah? Yes, did you want to?
That means the voice in the sky was wrong.
That's what Kamsa has come to say. So after hearing this, and he's thinking, he said, how is this that these mortal, my sister can give birth to Durga Devi? This is amazing. This is actually also what struck him. How is this? What kind of... And I've been torturing these people, and look how exalted they are. Thus, Kamsa was struck with wonder. Thus he approached his sister Devaki and brother-in-law Vasudeva, released them immediately from their shackles. That means he had them shackled up, and very humbly spoke as follows. Purport. Kamsa was astonished because the goddess Durga had become the daughter of Devaki, an ordinary mortal. Since Devaki was a human being, how could the goddess Durga become her daughter? This was one cause of astonishment. Also, how is it the eighth child of Devaki was a female? This also astonished him, because this voice in the sky had said the eighth child was a male and he'll kill you. And he'll say that. He'll say that later. He said, now not only human beings tell lies, even voices in the sky tell lies. This also astonished him. Asuras are generally devotees of Mother Durga, Shakti, or of demigods, especially Lord Shiva. The appearance of Durga and her original eight-armed feature holding various weapons immediately changed Kamsa's mind about Devaki's being an ordinary human being. Devaki must have had some transcendental qualities. Otherwise, why would the goddess Durga have taken birth from her womb? Under the circumstances, Kamsa, struck with wonder, wanted to compensate for his atrocities against his sister Devaki. He immediately released her. Alas, my sister! Alas, my brother-in-law! I am indeed so sinful that exactly like a man-eater, a rakshasa, who eats his own child, I have killed so many sons born of you. He's shaken up and he begins to see how terrible he's been. Being merciless and cruel, I have forsaken all my relatives and friends. Therefore, like a person who has killed a brahmana, I do not know to which planet I shall go, either after death or while breathing. In other words, for what I've done, in the next life, I'm going to have to suffer. In this life, I'm going to have to suffer. I've done so, like a rakshasa who eats his own children. Alas, not only human beings, but sometimes even providence lies. So he's talking about that voice in the sky. Not only humans tell lies in this world, but now what's going on? Even voices in the sky speak untruthfully. And I'm so sinful that I believe the omen of providence, and I killed so many of my sisters' children. Now in the next five verses, 18, 19, 20, 21, 22, Kamsa is going to speak philosophy straight out of the Bhagavad Gita. He's going to preach to her, just like Arjuna says, I don't want to fight because I don't want to kill these people. There'll be so much sinful reactions. And what did Krishna say? Say, wise people, you're speaking as if you're wise. But wise people don't say what you're saying. You're lamenting for that which is unlamentable. The soul can never die. The body must die. You cannot kill anyone, nor can anyone be killed. So Kamsa is going to also speak philosophy just like that right now. Oh, great souls, he's flattering Vasudev and Devaki. Your children have suffered for their own misfortune. Therefore, please do not lament for them. All living entities are under the control of the Supreme. They cannot always live together. Prabhupada's purport. Kamsa addressed his sister and brother-in-law as Mahabhagav, because although he killed their ordinary children, the goddess Durga took birth from them. Because Devaki bore Durga Devi in her womb, Kamsa praised both Devaki and her husband. Asuras are very devoted to the goddess Durga, Kali, and so forth. Kamsa, therefore, truly astonished, appreciated the exalted position of his sister and his brother-in-law. Durga is certainly not under the laws of nature, because she herself is the control of the laws of nature. Ordinary living beings, however, are controlled by these laws, prakriti kriyamana, nigunai kamani sarvasha. Consequently, none of us are allowed to live together for any long period. So that's what he's saying. It appears that I've killed your children, but actually everyone enjoys and suffers according to their destiny. They had some misfortune coming to them. What can be done? And not only that, even if they had lived, you're their mother, and actually you're crying in separation for the children that you've lost. But even if they've lived, there's no guarantee that the mother and her sons will be together. It's the nature of the world. It depends on destiny. By speaking in this way, Kamsa tried to pacify his sister and brother-in-law. There's a saying, the devil citing scriptures. This is what's going on here. He continues. There's five verses where he speaks nice philosophy. Even Haranyakashipu, in the seventh canto, he speaks very nice philosophy. In this world, Kamsa continues, we can see. So he's going to give five philosophical points. In this world, we can see that pots, dolls, and other products of the earth appear, they break, and they disappear, mixing with the earth. Similarly, the bodies of all conditioned living entities are annihilated. But the living entities, like the earth itself, are unchanging and never annihilated. So now he's saying that you can take some pots or some dolls, and they're earth, they're made out of earth, and then you can break them, you can turn them back into the earth, and then they disappear. But the earth doesn't change. So in a similar way, the body comes into being like the clay pot. It will break apart. It must break apart. It must go back into earth. But the soul doesn't change at all. The Atma, as Prabhupada explains in the purport, does not undergo birth, death, or change like the body. You have no connection. The soul has no chain connection with the body. So what? There's nothing to lament over. 20. One who does not understand the constitutional position of the body and the soul, the Atma, becomes too attached to the bodily concept of life. So there's karma in the first verse, he spoke about that, and providence. We'll talk more about providence. Everything is under superior control. Then there's no connection with the body and the soul. And if now he's talking about if one becomes too attached to the bodily concept of life, consequently, because of attachment to the body and its byproducts, he feels affected by union and separation from his family, society, and nation. And as long as this continues, one continues his material life. Otherwise, one is liberated. Good preaching, huh? Don't become attached to this child as yours. If you want to be attached, okay. But this will cause you to... I brought to one old story that there was at the funeral ghat, at the place where the bodies are burned. A dog came and a vulture came, and all the relatives were there around the burning body, and they were crying and crying, and the dog began to preach to them. And actually, when you go to a funeral ghat in India, the dogs are just waiting there. So the dog began to preach. It said, listen, the soul is gone already. There is no use of standing around the body and lamenting. You should be detached. Just leave. Just leave. There is nothing left. The person who you were attached to is gone. This is just the clay pot, like Kamsa said. There's no use even waiting around. Just go. Don't be so sentimental. Be philosophical. And the vulture said, no. There's a soul. You have spent so much time with this soul and this body, and you should offer proper respect to the times that you were together with him. So you should stay here until nightfall, and then you go. So they're both speaking philosophy, but the dog is telling them to leave now, because as soon as they leave, he'll eat the body. And the vulture is telling them to wait, because at night the dog will have to go, and then he'll eat the body. So whatever they're saying, what's inside is just selfishness. Philosophy is coming out their mouth, it may be very exalted philosophy, but inside, it's just the motivation is not purity at all. And therefore, when Prabhupada talks about preaching, he talks so much about compassion. Compassion. And if the preaching is motivated by compassion, then it is completely different from the dog and the vulture, they're preaching. We'll just read Prabhupada's purport, and then we'll read the final verses of Kamsa's philosophical points, Krishna willing. We'll finish that tomorrow, but we'll read the last of Prabhupada's purport, where Kamsa had said, don't be attached to the body. There's the soul, there's the body. If you're attached to the things of the body, if you're attached, telling Devaki and Vasudev, if you're attached to your sons that I've killed, then that will cause you future rebirths. So Prabhupada says in the purport, about one third of the way down, the body is subject to its own principles of birth, death, old age, and disease. But one who is situated in spiritual life, yato bhakti at hochaje, has no birth, no death, and no old age, and no disease. One may argue that we may see a person who is spiritually engaged 24 hours a day, but is still suffering from disease. In fact, however, he is neither suffering nor diseased. Otherwise, he could not be engaged 24 hours a day in spiritual activities. The example may be given in this connection that sometimes dirty foam or garbage is seen floating in the water of the Ganga. This is called Niradharma, a function of the water. The one who goes to the Ganga does not mind the foam and dirty things floating in the water. With his hand, he pushes away such nasty things, bathes in the Ganga, and gains the beneficial results. Therefore, one who is situated in the spiritual status of life is unaffected by foam and garbage or any superficial dirty thing. This is confirmed by Sri Rupa Goswami. Iha yasya hare dase kamana manasa gira nikalasa api avasta su jivan mukta uchate. A person acting in the service of Krishna with his body, mind and words is a liberated person even within this material world. Therefore, one is forbidden to regard the Guru as an ordinary human being. Guru su naramatir naraki sa. The spiritual master or acharya is always situated in the spiritual status of life. Birth, death, old age and disease do not affect him. According to the Hari Bhakti Vilas, therefore, after the disappearance of an acharya, his body is never burnt to ashes, for it is a spiritual body, spiritualized. The spiritual body is always unaffected by material conditions. So Prabhupada is speaking very strongly in his purport, giving a very serious topic about the exalted consciousness of an exalted spiritual master or any liberated soul, that he doesn't actually get diseased when his body is diseased because he's in realization that he's not his body. Okay, we'll stop here. So Krishna willing, we continue tomorrow. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Prabhupada ki jai.